This is RaceNetRadio.com. RaceNetRadio.com.
Welcome to Vocal Point on GraceNetRadio.com. Each week, we will examine issues that concern all Christians living in today's culture. Politics, theology, world affairs, citizenship, ethics, and personal responsibility. And now, your host of Vocal Point, Jerry Newcomb on GraceNetRadio.com.
All right, this is Jerry Newcomb, and boy, am I happy about today's program. Part one, Dr. Paul Kanger of Grove City College, author of a new book called 11 Principles of a Reagan Conservative. Part two, we'll be talking with Jim DeMint, former U.S. Senator, now the head of Heritage Foundation. But first, let's go right to Dr. Paul Kanger. I know I shouldn't play favorites, but I really love this guy, and I love talking with him every time. Paul, you're doing an absolutely terrific job at Grove City College. Now you've produced another book. How many books so far on Ronald Reagan alone?
Well, I think probably this is probably around four or five. I don't count. I have to, but I did God and Ronald Reagan in 2004. I did one called The Crusader. I did one on Reagan's closest advisor, Bill Clark. It's probably around five, I think, maybe six.
Okay.
Something like that. But who's counting?
And this, well, you were a few minutes ago. All right. This new book is called 11 Principles of a Reagan Conservative. First question, why wasn't it 10 or why wasn't it 12? How did you come up with the number 11? I think Mr. Monk would be upset.
Yeah. Well, and the publisher said initially, well, can't you just make it 10, like the 10 commandments of Reagan conservatism? Well, if I did that, I'd have to combine a couple, and I don't know if some of these categories are really combinable, right? And then they said, well, why not make it a dozen? I said, well, then I'd have to come up with another one, and I don't really have another one. I was challenged a couple years ago. We had a conference at Grove City College on conservatism, and that followed the conference the year before on progressivism. And the organizers said, they said, well, you know, for your presentation, Paul Kengor, you're the Reagan guy, so you need to do something on Reagan conservatism. And I said, well, I always do Reagan, right? I'm always doing Reagan for everything. Everybody always wants me to talk about Reagan. So how about if I do a talk on, like, is George W. Bush a conservative? I said, well, that's interesting. He said, but you're the Reagan guy. Everybody's always saying, I'm a Reagan conservative. I believe as Reagan believed. You have all these Republican presidential candidates claiming they're conservatives just like Reagan in the mold of Reagan. Well, what is that? So I said, okay, you know, no one's really done this. So I laid out the principles. And I did, I think at that time, Jerry, maybe I had a list of seven or eight. And then I gave that talk a number of other places. I gave it at CPAC, where I ran into Frank Gaffney, told me, he said, I can't believe you didn't include peace through strength.
Wow.
I said, oh, man, you're right. How could I forget that? So that bumped up to number nine.
Okay.
And then there were a couple more of those, including, Jerry, you and your audience will especially appreciate this. I added family as probably the last one. And shame on me for not realizing that ahead of time. But Reagan gave so many statements on the family, including some of the final, literal, formal proclamations of his presidency, even after his farewell address, that I realized, in addition to, you know, principles like freedom, faith, sanctity, and dignity of human life, family had to be one of them. So I ended up with 11 in the end.
Hmm. Now, Michael Reagan, who was, speaking of family, Ronald Reagan's adopted son, said, no Reagan biographer or scholar knows Ronald Reagan and conservatism like Paul Kanger. If you want to know what's really meant by Reagan conservatism, Paul Kanger is the guy, and this is the book. And again, the name of the book is 11 Principles of a Reagan Conservative. Do you want to give us a website? We'll get the commercial out of the way, and we'll get right into what those 11 principles are.
Sure. Well, you could get the book at Amazon.com, and also you could read a lot of my stuff at the website for the Center for Vision and Values, which is faithandfreedom.com.
Okay. 11 Principles of a Reagan Conservative. By the way, Reagan is the model. I mean, even liberals like to invoke the image or the memory of Ronald Reagan. Didn't Barack Obama even mention something? Boy, talk about hubris, where he was trying to liken himself to Ronald Reagan.
Right. Well, he would like to be like Reagan. I know that in his reelection, he would have liked to have won 49 out of 50 states. But there's a comparison right there, Jerry, is that Obama won only 26 states. You know, he won a bare majority, almost. I mean, flip one of those states, he wouldn't have won a majority of states.
Wow.
Reagan was reelected with 525 Electoral College votes, 525 to 13 in that 84 election. And when Reagan won, there was a sea of just red with all those counties in the county map. And Obama that was reelected with that county map still being a sea of red. So, you know, Obama would like to emulate Reagan's political success, and he hasn't done that. And certainly in terms of principles, I'd say these 11 principles of a Reagan conservative are really the antithesis, kind of the anti-Obama, anti-progressive principle.
I think that's true. Okay, so what are those principles?
Well, faith, freedom, family. I'm writing off the top of my head. I don't have them in front of me. Sanctity and dignity of human life, lower taxes, smaller government, limited government, peace through strength, anti-communism, belief in the individual. Did I say American exceptionalism? I think I did.
No,
the founder's wisdom and vision. Mm-hmm. And I go through these. I list freedom first. And then I list faith, and I did that because you hear all the time now, you know, one of the major battles within the conservative movement and Republican Party, it was evident again at CPAC a month or so ago, is this battle between libertarians that are always talking about freedom and conservatives. And both sides are always talking about freedom, 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 freedom. But what Reagan understood as a conservative, and you know what conservatives generally need to understand is that a conservative understands that freedom needs faith. You know, Reagan talked about the twin beacons of faith and freedom that brightened the American sky. Yeah, that's how he put it. You know, libertarians engage in this almost kind of idolatry of freedom, where freedom is the highest priority. Right? I just heard Matt Kibbe on a radio show on my way in, and Matt Kibbe runs FreedomWorks. He's a libertarian. Mm-hmm. And he's a good guy. He's a Grove City College graduate.
But.
And he was asked by the host, well, what would you do if Russia invaded Poland, especially with Poland being a NATO member? And Matt said, I would expand liberty. And it's not a sufficient answer. You can't always just be saying liberty, freedom. Because, you know, liberals, progressives, libertarians, conservatives, they all have different definitions of freedom. And so what the conservative believes, you know, to quote Galatians, right, Galatians 5:13-14, for you were called for freedom, brothers, but don't use your freedom as opportunities for the flesh. You know, rather serve one another through love. The whole law is fulfilled in one statement. You should love your neighbor as yourself. So, you know, freedom without faith is license. It can be moral anarchy. It can lack in virtue, and it can lead you to Las Vegas rather than the city of God. And Ronald Reagan understood that.
Wow, that's a great point. Now, do me a favor. Just, I don't want you to belabor the point, but since you brought up that example with the former Grove City College grad, connect the dots there. What was your point in reference to his answer about Poland?
Yeah, there's almost an idolatry of freedom, that if there's a problem in the world, if a country is having a problem, if two neighboring countries continue to have a dispute after they have, you know, one of them invaded the other during World War II, occupied it for 40 years, what's the solution? The solution is liberty. They say the solution is freedom. Well, that's not always just the solution.
I see.
What do you just tell Vladimir Putin, embrace liberty?
Yeah.
I mean, in some cases, that's where another Reagan principle comes in, peace through strength.
Right.
Where you have to say some people won't respond to the carrot of liberty and freedom, and you need to build up a strong enough military to tell them to stop, to cause them to not act or invade in the first place. And so often you get peace not through just a promotion of liberty and democracy, but through strength, building up a military so you never have to use it, or building up a military in some cases in order to use it to stop an aggressor and thereby get freedom. So it's not just freedom alone. And I think libertarians put freedom above all else. The conservative says, no. We want freedom, but you got to have faith with freedom. You know, George Washington, I know you're a Washington scholar. You've done great stuff. You have a great book on George Washington, Jerry. And George Washington said, individuals need to self-govern themselves before they can self-govern a nation. Mm. And self-governing yourself requires faith. You know, freedom needs the moral rudder of faith to help organize freedom so that our free will can be infused with God's grace in a way that will guide us to do good. Can you be good without God? Yeah, sometimes. But I think most Christians realize that if you don't have God, if you don't have the grace of God, it is hard to be good. And I can tell you that when I was an atheist, or at least an agnostic, I used to think that I was good, but I can tell you, man, I was not. And it wasn't until I became a Christian that I realized how truly sinful I was. I needed that faith with my freedom.
Hmm. All right, we're talking right now with Dr. Paul Kanger, author of a book called 11 Principles of a Reagan Conservative. And the publisher is who?
The publisher of this one is Beaufort Books, which is a small publisher, and Al Regnery is part of Beaufort Books.
Oh, wow. And how many pages about, I mean, just so we get an idea?
It's a big middle. It's about 150 pages. About half of it, I lay out the 11 principles, and then the final, the latter half is made up of four Reagan speeches that are really good that I think everybody should read. One is a February 1977 speech that Reagan gave at CPAC. Another is Reagan's farewell address, which is marvelous. Another is a totally unknown, forgotten speech that Reagan gave at Georgetown University in October 1988, where he lays out this relationship between faith and freedom that I think every American should understand.
Wow.
And I also include the Evil Empire speech. In addition to just the regular text of the Evil Empire speech, I think this is worth buying the book alone just to see this. The Reagan Library, God bless them, they gave us permission to reprint in the back of this book the original marked-up copy of the Evil Empire speech.
Wow.
That has Ronald Reagan's hand input, pages, self-written pages, handwritten pages all through it. And it's kind of an amazing thing to see.
That is amazing. Thank you. I look forward to that. And let me ask you a question. Reagan actually did write some of his own stuff. Now, obviously, there are some famous Ronald Reagan speech writers, probably the most prominent among them is Peggy Noonan, who is a columnist herself today. But didn't Reagan actually write some radio speeches and radio talks and so forth long before he was president? And they're just filled with wisdom and insights.
He did. And Reagan, in fact, wrote his inaugural address. You know, the entire thing is handwritten by Reagan, and you can view it today at the Reagan Library.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's an amazing thing, especially when you consider how liberals said he was stupid.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, no president writes his inaugural address, but Reagan did. And you can also find in these speeches, Jerry, just like
gems.
You know, I've seen this so many times at the Reagan Library. I'll be looking at a speech written by a Peggy Noonan, or Tony Dolan, or Peter Robinson wrote the Tear Down This Wall speech, and then suddenly you'll come upon just a margin comment by Reagan,
yes,
where he'll say something like, insert George Washington prayer, right?
Yeah.
And you know, in one of those, and I quote this in the book, one of Reagan's favorite images was Washington kneeling in the snow in prayer at Valley Forge. Mm. Reagan said, that is the most sublime image in American history. And why? And Reagan said, because Washington kneeling in prayer personified a people who knew that it wasn't enough to depend on their own. They couldn't depend on their own courage and goodness. Washington showed that they needed to seek help from God, their father and their preserver. So Reagan would insert words and lines like that in the speeches. In the Evil Empire speech, there's a great line where he says, "Let us pray for all of those who live in that totalitarian darkness, that they may come to know the salvation of God."
Wow.
And that line, which is so stirring, especially after calling the Soviet Union the home of evil in the modern world, that line in that speech, you can see by looking at that marked up text in the back of this book, that line is written in by Reagan himself.
Isn't that amazing?
So Reagan did that all the time, much more, far more than probably any president we think, maybe going back to Thomas Jefferson.
Isn't that interesting? It's funny, too, that you mentioned Reagan's farewell address. How often do you hear of somebody referring to a farewell address from a president? The only one I'm even familiar with, really, is George Washington from December 1796, you know, his farewell address. And by the way, it's my understanding he didn't even deliver that as a speech. It was just something released to the newspapers and other forms of distribution.
I didn't know that.
Basically written.
That's such a great speech.
Classic.
That's the one where Washington says that for political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable support.
Correct.
And Ronald Reagan quoted that all the time.
Right.
And again, that gets back to the faith and freedom thing. For political prosperity,
yep.
Right, religion and morality are indispensable supports.
Right.
And what concerns me so much today, with the Democratic Party especially becoming so much more secular progressive, is that when you start removing religion from this, you know, again, Reagan said it's faith and freedom both. That are the twin beacons that brighten the American sky. When you remove the faith component, you're going to remove that rudder that freedom needs.
Yep.
And that's what scares me about the culture and the direction of the country.
Well, you know, I don't want to be partisan here, but do you remember about a year and a half ago during the Democratic National Convention when there was a motion on the floor about...
Yeah.
Returning God by name into the Democratic platform and also recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, something like that.
They denied God three times.
Well, most of the people seemed to boo. So.
They did. They booed God. And Ronald Reagan said, he said, "Call me mystical, if you will," and I include all these quotes in the American exceptionalism part of the book.
Wow.
He said, "But I've always believed that this country was placed here between these two great oceans by a kind and loving God, hand of providence, for a special purpose in the world." And Reagan said, Reagan was convinced, people would say, "Do you really think America is this exceptional, this special?" And Reagan said, "Yeah, just look at what we've done in the 20th century and what we've done in the past. We've clearly been blessed by God."
Wow.
He said, I can't point to a Bible verse that tells you that. Of course God is, of course America isn't mentioned in the Bible. He said, but, you know, just look at it rationally, mm-hmm. and you can see this is a nation that's been so blessed. And conversely, and this ties to your point, Jerry, Reagan said, imagine a nation that had been so blessed by God, if that nation should one day turn its back on the very God that showered it with all those blessings, Reagan said, I shudder to think what will happen to that nation. And I frankly think that that's where we're headed.
Headed? I don't know. Maybe where we're at the moment. I mean, in some ways, I mean, unfortunately. And by the way, you mentioned that Valley Forge image of George Washington at prayer at Valley Forge. I remember many years ago I was defending the Christian position or a Christian position on the subject of school prayer, voluntary school prayer, one of these secular talk shows. Everybody was pitted against me, including the callers and so forth. When we finished the interview, I left the studio, and as I was leaving, I saw this image of an award that had been given to one of the personalities. It must have been one of the, I think it was a weekend conservative, token conservative for that radio station. And it was an image of George Washington at prayer at Valley Forge. And I said to my opponent, who, you know, we were walking out at the same time, I said, "Look, this is all I'm talking about. This is part of our history. You know,
right.
Why do we, you know, whitewash American history and make it out as if faith had nothing to do with it?" The Supreme Court itself said in 1892 in the Trinity decision, quote unquote, "This is a Christian nation." Now, that doesn't mean we were always acted Christian, but we certainly have Christian roots. And because we began with this great Christian blessing, people of all faiths or no faith are welcome here. But we shouldn't be so marginalized. People of faith shouldn't be so marginalized, especially not when people like George Washington and Ronald Reagan said
right.
that, you know, this
John
is our
Adams
roots.
Said, yeah, John Adams said that, you know, our Constitution was made for religious people.
Yep.
You know, it's wholly inadequate for any other type. And he realized that, as I said, one of the principles in this book is the founder's wisdom and vision. Reagan was constantly quoting these things from the founders over and over again on that point. Another one, he's not a founder, but in a way he kind of is, Abraham Lincoln. Reagan loved the quote from Lincoln, where Lincoln said, "I'm often driven to my knees by the overwhelming conviction that I have nowhere else to go."
Wow.
And Reagan said, "That's so true. You know, I'm often driven to my knees by the overwhelming conviction that I have nowhere else to go." And you know, again, it comes back to Washington. It personifies a people who knew that it wasn't enough to depend on their own courage and goodness. And you want leaders who believe that. You don't want leaders who think that they alone in their hubris and in their own mind that they have it all within themselves, that they have all the answers within themselves. Reagan said it's that divine book, the Bible, that truly has all the answers to all the problems.
Right.
So you know, we need to humble ourselves as a nation. Our leaders need to humble themselves. I fear that we're headed fast to a situation where we could one day, like Europe, like Germany with Gerhard Schroeder, a couple before Angela Merkel, where we could elect an atheist to the office of president, and I can easily see the Democratic Party in the very near future putting forward a nominee who's an atheist or agnostic or a non-Christian.
Well, I remember when Richard Dawkins, probably the leading atheist in the whole world, said just a couple of years ago, he said, "Come on, let's be honest. Barack Obama's an atheist. He just pretends otherwise," or something like that.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Oh, well, gee, you know. All right, we're talking right now with Paul Kanger. Kanger, by the way, is spelled K-E-N-G-O-R. He's quite the scholar. He's also a professor at Grove City College, but he's written this new book called 11 Principles of a Reagan Conservative. Boy, I'll tell you, Paul, this is good timing because I feel as if in some ways politically the conservative movement is in the wilderness, and this is the kind of book that can help them lead out of the wilderness because, frankly, you know, our country could easily be lost if we don't, you know, get on the right path again.
Well, that's right. And Reagan, you know, one of the speeches in here, the February 1977 one at CPAC, the reason that I put that in there, think about this, Jerry. Richard Nixon had resigned in disgrace. Gerald Ford had taken over the Republican Party leadership, couldn't win a single election, lost to Jimmy Carter. February 1977, Jimmy Carter had just been inaugurated. And the Republican Party is ripped apart, battles between conservatives and Rockefeller Republicans, detente Republicans, liberal Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And Reagan comes forward in February 1977 and says, "We need conservatism. We need a politics of principle and a principled politics." And Reagan said in that speech, and by conservatism, I mean both economic conservatives and social moral conservatives. He said, "I mean pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean pro-family, pro-prayer. I'm not excluding that from here. We need, these are both parts, economic lower taxes and pro-life are both parts of a conservative whole." And Reagan said, if we just lay out these principles and believe in them, stick to them, and articulate them, and do them in a winsome, attractive, effective manner, I believe that we can win the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1980, he did that. He won 44 out of 50 states, and then he continued on that same path. 1984, won 49 out of 50 states. And in those two elections, this is incredible. People that are Republicans, Democrats alike listening right now, just try to imagine this. Ronald Reagan, a Republican, twice won California, twice won Massachusetts, twice won New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, all those states. And he did it as an unabashed, unapologetic, pro-life, pro-family, pro-God conservative.
Yeah.
So if he could do it back then, by the way, when there are probably more people pro-choice than there are now, why can't somebody do it again today?
And he spoke those things. He didn't just hide his positions, but he believed them. And so now he once said famously, I didn't leave the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left me. Now, in the true spirit of bipartisanship, how about this? I didn't leave the liberal movement, but they left me.
Right.
Now, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. But why don't you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And that is what happened. And in fact, there are so many Democrats. And one of the things that never ceases to amaze me is how totally unified the Democrats are. I mean, they'll suddenly do something completely brand new that, like let's say same-sex marriage, which the entire party just 20 years ago was on board for the Defense of Marriage Act. And there's not a single one of them who will step forward and argue about it.
Right.
Right now, with this contraception mandate, the HHS mandate, mm-hmm. Hobby Lobby, Conestoga Woods, the Little Sisters of the Poor.
Right.
Can't there just be one Democrat who comes out and says, "Well, we really shouldn't be pushing this. You know, I disagree on this point." Or, you know, where's the debate in the Huffington Post or the New York Times that says, look, we are liberals, after all, so we should support the right of a florist in Oregon or Colorado to not have to be forced by compulsion through the state and threat of fine and imprisonment if they don't make roses or a wedding cake for a same-sex ceremony. After all, we are liberals, aren't we? But instead, they're all total unanimity on this stuff with nobody disagreeing on anything. They don't debate anything among themselves.
Right.
But I'm getting off subject. But with conservatives, Republicans, they need to have this debate so they can get back to rediscovering these conservative principles, this politics of principle and principle politics that Ronald Reagan understood and typified so well.
So as you survey the political landscape at present, do you see a Ronald Reagan out there?
Well, there are a number of people out there that I would call Reagan conservatives. I think Ted Cruz is one. I think Marco Rubio is another. Marco Rubio is getting a lot of flack for the immigration thing. But if you go through these 11 principles, Rubio embodies them as well as anybody, and especially the American exceptionalism point. The person, the Cuban boat person escaping Cuba to come to America because there's no place else to go that Reagan talked about in the Time for Choosing speech in 1964, that's Marco Rubio's family.
Wow.
The farewell address where Reagan talked about the Vietnamese boat people coming to America, Marco Rubio tells that story from personal experience, the same kind of thing coming from Cuba. I think Rand Paul is very close to this. His father was more libertarian than him. Rand Paul is also, to some degree, libertarian, but I think he's by and large a conservative. There's a number of conservatives in the Scott Walker, I think, is another, and there's probably a couple dozen in the House. So they're out there. I think 2016 for the Republicans and for conservatives looks a lot better than 2012 did.
All right, last question. Gary Bauer, who actually used to work for Ronald Reagan, once said one of the great aspects of Reagan is that he combined a three-legged stool. He was strong on defense, he was strong on the economy and free market principles, and then he was strong on the social issues. And in some ways, that summarizes the 11 principles of a Reagan conservative that you write about. Do you have any other comments about that three-legged stool? That Ronald Reagan, this way, he managed to coalesce a number of different voters who probably wouldn't vote for somebody else if they didn't like his issues.
No, I think that's exactly right. In fact, I just opened the book and I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, you could really group these 11, divide them into three for that three-legged stool. I think that's right on.
Right.
On foreign policy, peace through strength. I think right now with Obama and the Ukraine and Putin, I mean, word is from the Ukraine that that Putin has amassed upwards of 80,000 Red Army troops along the Ukrainian border.
Wow.
And, you know, that's after having already taken the Crimea. And,
wow.
And you know, I'll tell you, one person who's surprised by this is Barack Obama. One person who would not have been surprised by this was Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
You know, Reagan said, if you're going to approach the Russians with an olive branch in one hand, you have to have a sword in the other.
Hmm.
And Obama, so the Russians understand strength,
yeah,
not weakness. And Obama basically approached Putin with an olive branch in one hand and a bouquet of roses in the other.
So, well, yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, Obama gets this wrong. Peace through strength. You have foreign policy. That's one of the three legs of that stool. Gary Bauer is exactly right.
Well, I think it shows you, too, that Ronald Reagan was governing from a Christian worldview, a biblical,
yeah,
biblically based worldview. Did he go to church regularly?
He did. He went to church regularly his entire life and did through the first 5 or 6 weeks of his presidency as well. He went to the National Presbyterian Church in Washington. But what changed that was the assassination attempt,
yeah,
in March of 1981. And you know, I've talked to you about this before. I have a full chapter on it in my book, God and Ronald Reagan. But that completely changed things because of the terror threats, the threats that they were getting, the problem of going to a church and having everybody frisked, having they had SWAT guys on the roof,
security,
and helicopters
concerns
overhead during the service. This was a time when this sort of stuff was brand new to America.
Mm-hmm.
And Reagan said, I hate to do this, but I'm just going to have to quit going to churches. He didn't quit entirely, but he quit going regularly, weekly. But after 7, 8 years of that, when he left the presidency, he immediately rejoined his old church in Los Angeles and even insisted on taking the new members class.
Oh, that's great. Hey, Paul, thank you so much for this this book. We look forward to pouring into it. 11 Principles of a Reagan Conservative, again, by Paul Kanger, K-E-N-G-O-R. That number 11, by the way, is just the number 11, as opposed to spelled out 11. So 11 Principles of a Reagan Conservative. Thanks so much, Dr. Kanger, for being with us. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're great, Jerry. You have a terrific show. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. God bless. All right, bye-bye now. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Jim DeMint, now the president of the Heritage Foundation.